Hi, everybody. This is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome to the Abbott Talks podcast. Over the past few years, the world has come to recognize Abbott as a company dedicated to helping people live happier and healthier lives. In this podcast series, we'll talk with the healthcare leaders, the executives, and the engineers who are working every day to develop new technologies to help people live their best lives. I know you'll enjoy this episode of the Abbott Talks podcast. Hey, everybody, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Abbott Talks podcast. We're going to talk about electrophysiology today. I have with us two great guests, Dr. Christopher Piakowski, who is the Divisional Vice President and Chief Medical Officer of Electrophysiology at Abbott Cardiovascular, and Dan Kaiser. Dan is Divisional Vice President of Product Development of Electrophysiology. So we'll talk a lot about Abbott's EP portfolio, including the work it's doing in pulse field ablation. I actually learned a lot, not only about Abbott's work in the space, which I was sadly a bit ignorant of, but also how some of the testing goes on for PFA. I learned a lot about how potatoes are used. We'll put it that way. And I love my job. Every time I have these cool conversations with really nice people, they teach me something new, and I'm very grateful. So I know you'll enjoy this conversation, but first I want to bring in our sponsor, Cretex Medical. I'm here with Angie Hilliard. She's Director of Engineering at Cretex Medical. Angie, welcome to the podcast, and tell us a bit about Cretex Medical.
Well, hello, Tom. I'm glad to be here. Well, Cretex has been a family-owned company for over 100 years. And Cretex Medical is a contract manufacturer of medical devices and components. And we have three operating companies. There's QTS that does assembly, kitting, packaging, and sterilization management, as well as RMS, which is machining of precision components, including implants and instruments. And they also have additive manufacturing and metal fabrication of cases, trays, and enclosures. And then finally, the CDT group, which offers precision molding, metal stamping, and laser processing and device assembly.
Wow, you're covering a lot of ground at Cretex. What is your specialty?
Well, yeah, I am actually with the laser processing group in CDT, which is located in Dassel, Minnesota. And this team really pioneered laser process technologies, and we specialize in polymer and metal processing, as well as other value-add services, including electropolishing of stainless steel, nitinol, and cobalt chrome. We have nitinol shape setting and a variety of assembly operations, so anything from adhesive bonding to multi-component welded assemblies and including reflowed catheter shafts.
Okay, we'll pick up this conversation with Angie Hilliard a little later in the podcast. If you want to find out more about Cretex Medical right now, go to its website, cretexmedical.com, and Cretex is spelled C-R-E-T-E-X. So that's cretexmedical.com. Now let's get this podcast episode going. Well, Dr. Christopher Piakowski and Dan Kaiser, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Tom.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be here.
So we're excited to learn about where Abbott's headed in electrophysiology. You've got a lot going on, a lot to talk about in pulse field ablation. We're going to get into all of that. But before we do, I always love to learn a bit about our guests. Dan, why don't we go first? Because I know I've talked to Dr. Piakowski before, but we're going to review your career anyway, because I think it's been a while and I'd love to rehear the story. But Dan, how'd you find your way into the medtech industry?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. First, I love this part of the podcast. I've been listening to him for a long time, and just to hear people's entrance, their career, their history, it's part of the best things of the podcast. So
I always wonder about that if I'm taking too much time. I find the stories interesting, so I'm glad you do as well.
Or others. It is. Yeah. So came from a family that was in medical devices. Father was in CRM industry, and so dinner table talk kind of revolved around what he did, and we just grew up in that environment. And I think like a lot of your guests who are in engineering, a choice of whether you go to medical school or you work on solving problems for millions of people at one time versus seeing individuals one at a time, everybody crosses that path. And I just, as a kid, always grew up in that and loved to take things apart and learn how they worked. And you know, thinking about a career, what better way to spend your time than to try to understand the human body and how it works and bring solutions to the market that solve the issues that people have in healthcare. And that's just been something that is self-motivating. It's really easy to get out of bed and go to work. And it's been a great journey for me.
Is that a decision that came sort of organically, or was there a moment in your life or perhaps a difficult experience in your life that led to an appreciation of healthcare?
No, I think I always knew I was going to go in some direction of healthcare. But as I went through high school and college, I realized science and engineering and math was easier for me than other areas. So that made it possible for me to continue through undergrad to go get my master's and PhD. And then once I was in grad school and career, it just was so much fun. So kind of always felt like I would move in this direction.
That's great. That's fantastic. And Dr. Piotrkowski, what led you to medicine? I imagine a desire to be a physician might have been number one on your list.
Yeah, I'm coming from a family of physicians, so there may be some genetic predisposition there. I've always loved working with people, you know, and the idea that someone has a disease, has some illness, and you have the ability to help him to get better, that has an ultimate attraction to me still today. And that led me into medicine. And why I went into EP specifically, again, there was kind of a family trigger. Someone in my family was suffering from atrial fibrillation at a time when there was basically no real treatment. And it was quite an odyssey. And it was an eye-opener for me on the advances that have happened in the field of medical device technology over the prior 10 years and everything that was going on. And it was so fascinating that I ended up where I am.
What was the thing that led you to join Abbott on the corporate side of healthcare? What was the experience or the connector?
Yeah, Abbott called me. Abbott called me and asked me whether I wanted to be a medical officer. And I didn't have to think about it for too long, because over my clinical career, I've worked a lot with medical device industry in the field of developing catheters, developing tracking technologies, developing new ablation approaches. So I kind of had an understanding what the industry is doing, and I was very curious to look behind the curtain. So it didn't take me long to accept the offer.
Was it easy to make the decision to join? How was the adjustment period?
It has been a great experience. It has been a great experience working at Abbott and getting to know all the teams and the bright people who are at the fundamentals of these developments. And that is something physicians often don't see. They see the product, they use the product, they like the product, they dislike the product, but they don't see the people behind who are developing them, who spend a lifetime of innovating them, testing them, improving them. These are the teams Dan is responsible for. And it has been such a privilege and an honor to get to know them and to be able to work with them.
So one note, Tom, that I want to kind of plug for anybody who's thinking about going into a career of biomedical engineering. There's a synergy that you have to have with physicians and users to understand what their needs are. Having Christopher join us working side by side with the development team has been invaluable, because that insight and the immediate feedback that we have on all the decisions you have to make to finalize a feature or a product. And so my pitch is, if anybody's going to go into the field, be very conscious about the thought of who or how can you get that feedback, whether it's in an engineering school that is partnering with a medical school or an engineering school that has a medical school. I think that is invaluable.
It's definitely, I would think a different experience or a different world than in aerospace or other more industrial technologies. I think you really have to understand a lot more complexities of not only technologies, but humans as well, as you noted, but also healthcare also. I mean, there's just so many different boundaries. So that's a really great point about the affiliation with a medical school. I could see how that could be instrumental.
And that is something we live every day, right? Our offices, Dan and my offices, are next door to each other. And this intersection between medical science and engineering, that is something which is like a paradigm in our daily work. And not only between us, but also cascaded down in the hierarchies and actually going out to the customers and learning and understanding their needs.
Great advice. So let's talk about the business that you're both in, electrophysiology. Let's talk first about the diseases that you treat. Christopher, if you could sort of touch upon, we talked about atrial fibrillation. I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about it, but what else falls under that umbrella, or is atrial fibrillation the big one?
From a market perspective, catheter ablation of atrial fibrillation is probably the fastest growing area, but it's not the only arrhythmia patients suffer from. There are many others. Some are related to atrial fibrillation. Others are completely independent. They all have different root causes. Some are inborn diseases. Some are acquired diseases over a lifetime. So when we think about the clinical field of cardiac electrophysiology today, it's really a wide spectrum of diseases patients present with. And from a technology perspective, I think it is important for a big company to build products and solutions that help physicians to address every single arrhythmia. Because the patient doesn't come through the door and say, I have atrial fibrillation, please isolate my pulmonary veins. The patient comes through the door and says to the physician, I have palpitations or I have shortness of breath. And then the workup starts, the diagnosis starts, and the treatment starts. And I think being able to address that wide spectrum of electrical heart diseases, that is what makes our company strong.
And all of these conditions and these symptoms, they all center around the electrical current of the heart. They're all sort of drawn from that same, I guess, biological function and a disruption of that.
Yeah. I think a good analogy is to think about the heart as a house, which has electrical wires and switches inside. And these electrical wires and switches coordinate the mechanical functions of the different heart chambers and valves. And when such a wire breaks or a switch goes down in function or loses insulation, that's a moment when arrhythmias can develop. And it's the task of the electrophysiologist to understand the root cause, to localize the problem, and to go there and fix it with a catheter.
Interesting. All right. Well, that's a great analogy. And Dan, I'd like to then have you pick it up from a technology point of view. As an engineer and someone developing technical solutions, do analogies like that, they obviously oversimplify the condition of the heart, but do they present accurately how engineers kind of go at problems and sort of try to develop devices to treat problems? There's, again, more complexities and layers with the human body, but how do you approach a problem like the one Christopher just described?
Yeah, I like that analogy because it simplifies what's really going on. And at the end of the day, it is the electrical circuitry of the heart that becomes abnormal. Like a lot of diseases, it doesn't all go down at once. It manifests over time. So if you can understand the earliest indicator of that malfunction, you know, maybe it's a bulb that's going out early, or it's just one line that's going down versus your whole electrical activation goes away. If you can understand that early, that's key to treatment success. So it's shades of gray along that disease progression. And so the treatment is much different whether you are diagnosed early in the disease like atrial fibrillation, or if you wait years and years and you have symptoms and just never get it taken care of. So paroxysmal atrial fibrillation is characterized as not as serious as persistent atrial fibrillation. So we know that the outcomes when you treat paroxysmal are going to be better because you're attacking the problem sooner. Also, the tools from an engineer, the tools that you use for whether you're treating someone early on versus later are going to be different. And we can talk about some of those tools as we get into this.
Terrific. Let's do it now. Let's talk about some of the products in your portfolio. I'll just throw the ball in the air and let you two sort of fight for it. But give us a sense of some of the tools and some of the products that are currently finding their way into the hands of physicians and helping patients.
Maybe we'll start this way. We can talk about the journey of treating arrhythmias in electrophysiology. I think early on, the challenge was how do you visualize what you're doing in the body. And if we go back to some of the earlier tools, they were around mapping non-invasively and providing feedback about navigating in the heart with what we call catheters. And the catheters are used to ablate or burn. And when I say burn, there's a thermal effect that you can use with radio frequency ablation, or there's other modalities like cryoablation. And now a lot of people are working on pulse field ablation. So all these modalities really are to treat the recurrence in the pathology. But if you go back to the original tools, it was very basic. You could use fluoroscopy, but over time, people didn't want to use as much X-ray. And so you wanted to have non-invasive imaging like CT, or what they use now are ICE catheters or ultrasound in the heart. So all these tools have progressed over time to make the outcomes better, to make the procedures more efficient from a workflow perspective, and to make them much safer. So those are just some of the progressions that have happened over time: imaging, navigation, and then mapping the arrhythmias.
Yeah, and just echoing what Dan was describing, I think what is like fundamental to our entire product portfolio is the tracking technology, the ability for the physician to localize the catheter in the heart, to know where it is positioned. The evolution of tracking technologies have really opened the field of electrophysiology 20 years ago. Our tracking technology is the NZX system. It has some unique features, and we can talk later about this when comparing to other tracking technologies out in the field. But that's really the fundament of our technology, of our business, of our company. And all the tools that physicians then use to understand the mechanism, to diagnose it, to treat it with the various energy sources, all the catheters, the ultrasound devices, all of that is built on top of this underlying tracking technology. It's built on top of NZX, and it represents a whole ecosystem with product offerings for the various types of arrhythmias we discussed.
And as Christopher said, the tracking modalities were numerous. You had companies that developed impedance mode to track, where you would create a field effect and measure it at the electrodes in the heart, or you could have magnetics, or you could have an ultrasound type system. All these were meant to help navigate the catheter to the point where you're mapping the arrhythmia and then treating the arrhythmia. And they've gotten a lot more accurate over time, to the point where you're within millimeters of where you need to be. And also there's sensors built into these catheters that give you force contacting. And so you know when you're on the wall, which is a critical safety issue, if you push too hard, you could perforate. So over time, all these tools have advanced to become safer and more efficient.
So is tracking, is that the same as mapping? Am I conflating two different things, or two words for the same thing?
Two different things are going on with these systems.
Okay.
One is navigation, which you can track where your catheter is in space.
Gotcha.
Another one is what we call geo creation or geometry. So with the sensors, you know where the walls of the heart are, and so you can actually recreate the geometry of the chamber of the heart that you're working in, whether it's the atrium or the ventricle. And then simultaneously, when you're on the wall, you can collect the electrical activity and create an electrical map. So all these three things are used in these mapping systems to facilitate the procedure.
How different does the addition of these technologies make the experience? What was it like earlier on performing these procedures? Was it, I don't want to say guesswork, but was it a bit of experimenting? Yeah, that's a bad word too. What was the experience like? I'm going to stop putting words toward you and let you tell me yourself.
Yeah, Tom, it's a great question. And before the technology was available, we used to call it youth is doing science, right? That's what it was. You basically went with a catheter into the heart. And the only way to know where the catheter is located was based on the fluoroscopy, was based on the electrical signal that the catheter delivered, and was based on your tactile feedback. When you felt that the catheter would not advance anymore, you knew you were hitting a wall. But that's not always safe. At that time, electrophysiologists painted on the fluoro screens certain information that they saw from the catheter when the catheter was in this location. So it was all quite primitive, and successful ablation procedures took a long time. They were risky, and they took a very skillful person with a lot of training, the pioneers of our specialty. The introduction of these 3D tracking technologies have really opened the space. They have made the therapies accessible for wide use by standard physicians, by different geographies, and also pushing the limits of which patients can be treated successfully. The entire story of atrial fibrillation is a result of this technological evolution. At the beginning, with fluoroscopy without 3D mapping system, it was nearly impossible to treat atrial fibrillation.
So I would think as these technologies get incorporated and the procedure becomes more predictable, more data-driven, and safer, and I'll use the word safer, I would imagine that opens up the market to more patients. If you have a patient who has a severe problem, you obviously are going to treat them earlier on. But if someone had a moderate problem, maybe the procedure might be as risky as the condition. But as these technologies get safer, I imagine there's more people who you're comfortable treating with these technologies.
Yeah. And this is as a good example for what you're describing, Tom. And these are the patients with heart failure and atrial fibrillation. So these patients are in severe condition. They are difficult to manage. The procedure cannot take too long. They are restless on the EP table because they are in bad conditions. And these patients have only received access to the therapy with the technological evolution that we are describing. And now we understand that successful catheter ablation of atrial fibrillation in those patients has a mortality benefit. It really saves lives, and that has penetrated into clinical practice guidelines. That's how far the impact reaches that these technologies have.
Interesting. Dan, going back to the sensor at the tip that's measuring how the contact is with the heart, is that relying on pressure? What is that using to measure the...
Yeah, you can think about, there's a lot of ways that you can measure contact on tissue. One of the ways that Abbott has developed that is through a fiber optic sensor. So it actually measures the force by sending a fiber optic signal down and looking at deformation of the tip and sending it back into the system. And that's how you can figure out in three dimensions which way the force is being transmitted and how hard you're transmitting the force. Other ways are through what they call electrical measurements. You can use impedance because there's a difference between the blood pool and the tissue. You can use what's called a piezoelectric sensor, just a force bridge that transfers it back into the system. So a lot of these technologies come about through intellectual property. Someone will develop a method, they'll patent it, and then you'll have to come up with a different way to do the same thing to avoid, you know, the IP. And that's part of the fun of the engineering is, you know, you got to come up with somewhat the end game, but in a different way.
It's fascinating. It sounds so simple when you say it, and then you start to think about what goes into it. And is there any other industry where that sort of data and technology is necessary or applied? This would seem to be something that's unique to healthcare, given that you're working inside a person and the material is soft. But I don't know. Maybe there's an aerospace application that I don't know about, or automotive or something. Is it unique to medtech?
Sure. You can think about any application where you just can't see necessarily what you're doing.
Yeah.
So you can go to the deep oil well drilling. You know, you want to have force feedback on where you're going. Mm. There's just all kinds of ways that you can think about. You can't visually see what's going on, but you want to have feedback.
Interesting. All right. We'll take a quick break from this conversation to bring back our sponsor, Cretex Medical. Once again, I'm speaking with Angie Hilliard. She is the Director of Engineering at Cretex Medical. Angie, there's a lot of talk about pulse field ablation. Tell me, what do you see happening in this space? What do you see for the future?
Well, I think there's going to be significant innovations continuing in this space. In cardiac treatment alone, I would expect to see additional advances in imaging technology, energy delivery, and catheter designs. So we're going to see expanded product versatility and improved precision of PFA procedures. And I think we'll see more complex yet sophisticated devices that are going to need to focus on usability. So making them easier for clinic staff to use, resulting in improved patient outcomes.
Angie, let's talk some more about those advancements. What are some of the broader impacts you see on the medtech industry coming from PFA advancements?
Well, I think we're going to continue to see innovation in PFA, which is likely to significantly impact both the device manufacturers and the supplier. There's certainly increased competition as more companies introduce products, and then device manufacturers really have to have that capability to quickly evaluate design iterations. So working with a partner capable of fast prototyping a variety of component designs. Device manufacturers are also going to be faced with increased pressures to have product differentiators, so either function, usability, or cost. And then suppliers are going to need to have expanded capabilities for those differentiators, as well as ensuring cost control measures. So as the devices will continue to get more and more intricate, ongoing advancements in high precision process technologies are going to be needed, and engineering teams need to have devices and production processes that are designed for scalability. So device manufacturers need to partner with suppliers that can quickly scale from prototype to high volume manufacturing.
So Angie, I'd like to learn a little more about Cretex Medical. Tell us, what does your typical customer look like?
Well, we really work with a variety of medical device customers. So our customers range from small startup companies to global multi-billion dollar medical device manufacturers. And we have projects ranging from a new product idea or proof of concept, and customers potentially working on first in man or clinical studies, as well as fully globally launched medical devices.
So we know what those customers look like. How does Cretex Medical work with those customers?
Well, honestly, collaboration is key for the best outcomes. So we partner with our customers early when they're developing new products and going through some iterative design cycles. But we also work with customers on supply chain diversification, so they are minimizing their single source risks. We have open communication and collaboration with our customers, which is imperative. So we really need to understand the requirements and applications for their devices so we can help develop the best solution for that customer. We have a dedicated team of engineers and technical staff working exclusively with new products and processes that can provide that fast and iterative prototyping. But we also have dedicated resources working on continuous improvement and volume scale up for sustained manufacturing. And here at Cretex Medical, we're passionate about making it easier for our customers to get their products to patients.
Well, that's fantastic. Angie, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. We really appreciate your time.
I appreciate it, and thanks for having me.
All right, once again, thank you to Cretex Medical for sponsoring this episode of Abbott Talks. If you'd like to find out more information about Cretex, go to cretexmedical.com. That's C-R-E-T-E-X medical.com. Well, let's talk about sort of where this field is headed. Pulse field ablation are the buzzwords going on, and we've got a couple of systems approved, and I know you folks are, you've got your own program. Talk a bit about where you are. Well, let's first talk, Christopher, if you could, what's different about pulse field ablation? Why is there so much excitement around it? What options and opportunities does it provide physicians that more traditional energy hasn't or doesn't?
Yes. So I think the big excitement for pulse field ablation comes from two factors. Number one, it is an ablation energy source which is able to create real fast lesions. And that is important to physicians because the heart is moving and the catheter is bumping. So the longer they need to stabilize the catheter, the more difficult it is to create a lesion. So any technology that makes a lesion fast is something which is highly appreciated. The second aspect is the potential superiority on safety topics due to tissue selectivity. And that is especially relevant for the esophagus. When physicians treat atrial fibrillation, they ablate in the region of the posterior wall of the left atrium. And behind the posterior wall of the left atrium is the esophagus. And we know from RF ablation that there is a rare instance of esophageal injury. The rate is about 1 in 1,000 patients. It's rare, but it's very lethal. So if it happens, the patient have a high risk to die from it. And every physician who's treating atrial fibrillation is afraid of that complication due to that severe outcome. And pulse field has the potential to eliminate that risk because it's tissue selective. It only ablates cardiac tissue, but it leaves the esophageal tissue, the esophagus, alone. And these two factors together have led to this huge interest and to this huge wave of technological development. That being said, it is like any new technology. At the beginning, there is a lot of interest and a lot of potentials being seen. And then the realism sets in and it becomes visible what are limitations, what are gaps, what are shortcomings. And I think we are now in PFA in that second phase of the innovation curve. And we will talk about our own development in Abbott. Dan will share the technical insights. We have deliberately addressed some of these or many of these gaps and limitations. And therefore, we believe that our PFA solution is fundamentally different. It combines these two favorable aspects of speed and tissue selectivity and safety with a unique design that addresses limitations in lesion depths and lesion durability, in bubble formation and thermal effects and skeletal muscle recruitment. And all of that goes back to the deliberate design of the engineers that was done in-house in Abbott over the prior years.
That's great. Dan, I do want to get into that in a moment, but at the start of your answer, Christopher, you mentioned that the heart is beating, and that's something that doesn't even occur to me. Like, this thing is moving that you're trying, that you're applying energy to. And just a real basic question, does the heart, when you're looking at it, does the heart beat, does the movement, is it rhythmic and predictable, or does it kind of jerk all over the place as it's beating, or really does it depend?
Yeah, it's a good question. You should not have shaky hands when you maneuver a catheter. The motion is not always predictable. It depends on the rhythm. And
yeah,
it's interesting motion is also very different in various aspects of the heart. It's different at the valves, it's different at the apex, it's different at the base of the heart. And it is influenced, it's not only the heart that is moving, but it's also influenced by respiratory motion or sometimes when the patient is moving. So there are different motion aspects and there is a whole bunch of signs how the heart is moving. And I know Dan is an expert on the science of heart motion.
Right, that's awesome. I love that, learning those little snippets. Dan, so talk to us a bit about what Abbott is working on as a solution. And you mentioned before I push record just how rapidly this pulse field ablation is moving in terms of new development.
Absolutely. Yeah, pulse field ablation as a concept started in the teens, probably around 2012, 2013 is when people really started to look at alternate modalities of delivering therapy that didn't have the side effects. What Abbott did back in, I want to say 2017, 2018, was come up with a solution which utilized an existing product that we had, which was a variable loop catheter. And it had 14 electrodes in a circle. And one of the things that we were after is treating atrial fibrillation in the pulmonary veins. And the pulmonary veins are kind of a generation of atrial fibrillation that's well known that if you isolate the pulmonary veins, you can effectively treat patients on the order of 12-month freedom from AF is in 75 to 85% of the cases. So our approach at that time was let's create a variable loop catheter, treat the pulmonary veins, and see what the outcomes were. And we did some of the first human trials in the world at the University of Utrecht. The 10 patients isolated their pulmonary veins acutely, which means over 30 minutes, you can go back and look at whether or not they remain isolated. But then when we came back a couple weeks later, we looked at these 10 patients and three of them had reconnections. We then started to look at why was that? What was the method of reconnecting? Did we not effectively treat at the time? Was there something that's called reversible electroporation, which causes stunning but not permanent damage? So we did a bunch of research. We realized that at the time, we didn't have that feedback knowing whether we were on the wall or not when we were delivering therapy. And with PFA, it's vitally critical that you have wall contact to efficiently deliver energy. So we kind of set back and said, let's design a catheter that gives us feedback that you know you're on the wall and it adequately isolates pulmonary veins. And that's where we ended up with a system called Volt. It is not a variable loop catheter, but it's more of a spline catheter, has 8 splines, and it has a balloon in the middle.
What is a spline? And the balloon,
yeah, a spline is a nitinol section, thin section of ribbon of metal that's maybe 2 millimeters wide by 2 centimeters long. And you can think of splines in, trying to think like a fly swatter would have splines holding the mesh. So Think of splines as a basic construct. And then there's a balloon in the middle that helps those splines remain in contact with the pulmonary veins. And then we measure the contact impedance of those electrodes to know whether we're on the wall. And then we deliver energy. So that whole system we developed from scratch to address the issue that contact is critical. And one other thing that the balloon, when filled with saline, does is it insulates the blood pool from energy being dumped away from the tissue. So it preferentially directs all the energy directly into the pulmonary veins. So that was something that we at the time knew was going to be critically important and designed ours from the ground up. It turns out now a lot of the features and systems that are being used do not have that feedback. They don't tell you when you're on the wall. You might have to use x-ray or fluoroscopy to see whether you're on the wall, and that's not very accurate. And therefore, a mapping system might be needed in similar cases like that. So again, all this was kind of designed into our solution to make sure that we had the most efficacious and easy delivered PFA solution on the market.
And this has all been developed internally because others, I think, have gone through the acquisition route to acquire this and that. But
correct. Yeah, we definitely developed all this technology internally over the years, knowing what we knew, watching kind of the startups go through their generational learnings. We'd already been down that path. We knew some of the deficits that they were bringing to the market. So we just felt like our internal solution was going to be much better in the long run.
And where are you in the development of that? And do you have a timeline for approval?
Sure. I can defer to Christopher. He can talk about where we're at in the clinical trial and how that's going.
Yeah, I was going to, and Christopher, in addition to that, I was curious, as you're out there dealing with the medical world. You know, you've got two systems that are out there. Yours is coming. I would love to know, like, how you sort of lay the groundwork for letting folks know, like, just hold on, like, Abbott's coming with something you're going to want to check out. I'd love to know how you're interacting with healthcare professionals that way.
Tom, I've just returned from a trip which took me to Australia and Europe, visited 8 countries in 2 weeks and went to all the clinical sites that are doing cases with our PFA technology, which is called Volt, with our Volt technology. And I see a lot of excitement due to the differentiating factors that Dan has described. Just to give you some data bullets, every other PFA solution, every other company with a PFA solution had to go back after first in human cases and readjust their technology, readjust their waveforms, because the lesions that they deployed were not according to their expectations or for other reasons. That has not happened to us. We have been running through the clinical CE mark trial. We've now treated roughly 120 patients. And until now, everything holds to what we are expecting the technology to deliver. And that is, for me, a credential, a sign of engineering ingenuity. So they started with computer models. They developed actually the potato model that is now widely used, went to animal work and bench data. And now we see the human data holding what we were expecting the technology to deliver in terms of speed of lesions, limited number of lesions, and durability of lesions. Again, as a data point, our technology is designed to isolate the pulmonary veins with 2 PFA applications. So you deploy the device, push the button, rotate the device, push the button twice, pulmonary vein is isolated. If you assume 4 pulmonary veins, these are 8 applications in a patient. That compares to competitive devices which are out there in clinical use, where physicians need to deploy 70, 80, sometimes 100 applications in order to get the intended lesion set that they want to achieve. And physicians see that difference. Physicians see the difference in lesion performance. They see the ease of use because it's accurately tracked in EndSight. They know the contact that they have, and they can rely on the effect of the therapy. And that's experiences and impressions I'm bringing back from that journey.
Interesting. You mentioned the potato model. Is this a code word for something, or are you actually using a potato?
I give that to them.
Just curious.
Yeah, it turns out, so when you want to have a bench experiment to see what the effects of irreversible electroporation are, you can slice a potato in half and treat it with electroporation. And when you have what's called TTC staining, it'll give you an area of ablation, which is pretty equivalent to what you would get in the human heart.
Really?
So, yeah, it's a very low-cost, efficient way to demo what would happen in animal models, a lot more ethical. You don't have to go through a lot of animals to get your results, and that's what we use, and a lot of people use for that type of bench experiment.
Potato consumption has gone up in the Twin Cities with our development.
I was going to say, I know Shockwave used an egg in their early trials. You're using a potato. We need to do a whole feature on foods that are driving medtech innovation.
Right.
So you've been very generous with your time. I think that's kind of the forward-looking opportunity. Christopher, if you could just give us a sense of where we're heading in this. We talk about pulse field ablation, sort of its arrival 10 years ago, which I think in some other industry sounds like a long time. To medtech, it sounds like a moment, overnight sensation to have a technology just emerge and then become such a driver now. Where are we headed? Is the development of new technologies and products, do you see it just, let's talk clinically, is the creation of new clinical tools that will be used in patients just going to continue in advance? And then Dan, we can talk about the technologies.
Yeah, I think medtech is by far not at an end of its development. There are so many unaddressed needs that I it's difficult for me to estimate, but I would see meaningful technological evolution in the field of electrophysiology alone for the next 20 years, if you ask me. If I would make a wish list, what I would want to have in my patient and give it to Dan, he has a job until the end of his life as an engineer. And I'm just one physician, 100 physicians, and this wish list gets longer. What we see right now with PFA is a fundamental change in the way ablation is being done. And the Volt system is our first solution that we bring into the field. We already expect from Volt to be a true differentiator, enable AF ablations at a different level to what is known today. We are thinking about procedures that may take 20, 30 minutes in total that can be done in conscious sedations versus general anesthesia, where the level of skill set is a very different one that is needed today, which would all help to treat more patients and enable access to the therapy. Because right now you find waiting lists everywhere in the country, patients not receiving the therapy where they would benefit from. And Volt, in our opinion, will fundamentally change that. However, it is not the only development in that space. We have follow-up products following with our experience from this energy source. And then we'll talk probably about them. We are thinking about focal solutions, which utilize the benefit of PFA for other ablation areas in the pulmonary veins. Also thinking about ventricular arrhythmias, about thinking about heart failure patients with devices who have incessant VTs, which is an increasing problem, and it's very hard to treat today. So there's a lot of evolution and development ongoing, and I think it's an exciting time.
That's great. Dan, you have a job for life, so that's comforting. I hope you have no plans to retire, but what about on your side of things? How do you see things moving forward?
We talk about this a lot. You know, what are the unmet needs? And they kind of fall into a number of areas, and we can kind of classify them this way. You look at, there's an imaging and navigation need. The users want to be able to know where they're at all the time with accuracy so that it reduces the complications and the issues of being in the wrong place or not really knowing if you're in a place that would cause significant harm. That's a whole area that we're working on, which is ICE, integrating ICE into the mapping system. And then when you get to where you want to be, how do you understand the arrhythmia? So there's a whole detection and analysis, and that gets down to the EGM information, electrical activation. How do you process it? What AI is available that's coming down the pipe? What machine learning algorithms can be used to understand how to treat that area that you're at? And then the third piece is really, okay, what mode are you using? Is it safe? Is PFA going to be the mode? Is it radio frequency? Is it cryo? You know, each type of mode will have its benefit in each instance. And then you pull all these together into an efficient workflow. The idea is, the unmet need is really, how do you treat more patients quicker, safer, with better outcomes? And I think, kind of summarizing it all, when you can provide that type of outcome, people are going to adopt your solution and you're not going to have to push it. It's going to be pulled. And that's kind of what we try to do as an organization, is learn what their fundamental needs are, create the tools and processes and workflows, and treat more patients ultimately with safer and better outcomes.
Fantastic. Well, I learned a ton and enjoyed this conversation immensely. Thank you both for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of Abbott Talks. Thanks again to Cretex Medical for sponsoring this episode of Abbott Talks. I hope you're subscribed to the Device Talks Podcast Network so you don't miss any future episodes of Abbott Talks or other great podcasts. You can subscribe in any major podcast player. If you enjoyed this conversation, be generous, share it with others, share it on LinkedIn, connect with me on LinkedIn as you do, tag me on your post. I'd love to be part of that. My name is Tom Salemi, S-A-L-E-M-I. I'm at Device Talks. You can also tag Device Talks, tag Abbott, and tag Mass Device while you're at it. Have a good time. Of course, tag Cretex Medical because they're great sponsors of this episode. Please do give us a ranking, if you don't mind, to let us know how you like the Device Talks Podcast Network. It's always great to hear how folks are enjoying the program. All right. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of Abbott Talks. Tune in next time. We'll have another great conversation coming to you from the folks at Abbott. Take care, everybody. We'll be right back.